You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 99.55 kHz, Monday through Friday night, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please make note of the following Worldwide Freedom Radio Network programming scheduling changes. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m., the Hour of the Time, with yours truly, William Cooper. Monday and Tuesday nights, 9 until 10 p.m., Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham. Thursday nights, 9 until 11 p.m., Home Satellite Radio Show with Dan Morgan. Friday nights, 9 until 11 p.m., Friday Night Live with Gary Bourgeois. And Saturday nights, 11 p.m. until 1 a.m., American Exposé with Chris Gerner.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, during this broadcast, you're going to hear some strange noises. You're going to hear the sounds of a terrific wind up here on top of this mountain. And you may, from time to time, hear something hit the outside walls of the house, because that's how strong the wind is. Normally, during a tremendous high wind like this, we would not do a live broadcast, because normally it is accompanied by periodic, and I mean frequent, periodic power outages and power surges. But we have miraculously had none of those today, so I'm going to attempt a live broadcast. However, if we should begin to experience intermittent power outages and power surges, which will trip us offline and off the air, then I will go to reruns or just go off the air. So if that happens, you will be expecting it, and there will not be the accompanying rumors that happen when I go off the air, such as, he's dead. No, he's not. He's alive. And we're going to do a live broadcast today, if the wind and the power permits. So you all cross your fingers, say a prayer, whatever it is that you personally do. I've already done my little prayer, and we'll go on with it. But before that, let me correct the phone number that I gave you the other day. The Doyle Chamley had given us the wrong phone number for my speaking engagement in Porterville, California. So I'm going to give you the correct phone number today. I will be speaking in Porterville, California. In fact, I'll be giving a six-hour lecture, workshop, whatever you want to call it. But it's going to be 6 hours in length. It's going to be in-depth, like nothing that you've ever attended before. I very seldom give breaks or intermissions. Once I get started, I tend to go straight through. So you're going to get your money's worth. None of it goes to me, unfortunately, because we could use it. So this is for you. All the money that you pay up front to get in, which is $10 per person, goes for the rental of the hall, and for the tremendous amount of advertising that is taking place. For instance, they have 10 announcements on radio in the area on the local stations every single day up until the time that the event happens. And to tell you the truth, with the cost of radio advertising and other advertising, they'll probably lose money on this. So, you know, you can feel comfortable that the $10 you're paying is more than a fair price. This is in Porterville, California, Saturday, April 26, 1997, from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m. So you better eat a good lunch if you're coming. For more information, call Doyle Shamley at 209-781-0374. The number that I gave you on the previous broadcast is incorrect. The correct number is 209-781-0374. Porterville, folks, is approximately 50 miles northeast of Bakersfield, California. And forget the highway that it's on. I used to know. Starts with a 9, I think. But anyway, once again, I will be giving a 6-hour lecture Saturday, April 26, 1997, from 1 p.m. till 7 p.m. The cost of admission is $10 per person. It pays for the hall and all the advertising pursuant to this event. For more information, call Doyle Shamley at 209-781-0374. Once again, 209-781-0374. There's going to be a lot of people there, so make sure that you make arrangements early so that you'll have a good seat. We already know that quite a few people are coming in from the East Coast and from the Midwest, and that's not to mention all of the people who are within close driving distance in California, Nevada, Idaho, and Arizona. So call now, 209-781-0374. Make your personal arrangements early enough so that you'll get there okay. I also need to know, just a couple of people have called, I need to know how many of the listeners to this broadcast have purchased precious metals in any form from Swiss America Trading from September 96 until the present, including September of 1996. I know you can hear that wind. Call my secretary, Connie, at 520-333-4578 during this broadcast or any time for 1 hour afterward, or tomorrow morning after 9 a.m. until noon, or after 1 p.m. until 5, unless I'm taking calls, which I probably will not do. We are expecting here in this area snow. Up on snow, with snow predicted on top of that, covered by snow and more snow through Saturday. So the next couple of days, you may hear reruns due to that fact, because severe weather up here in these mountains affects our power supply, and this studio has no power backup. So expect reruns tomorrow night and the night after. I can tell you tomorrow we will be running The Dawn of Man, which originally aired February the 11th, 1993, and is the precursor tape to the Mystery Babylon series, and Mystery Babylon number 1, entitled The Son, spelled S-U-N, of God. So make sure that you don't miss it. If you've never heard the Mystery Babylon series, this will open your eyes. It will begin to educate you as to the true meaning of the mysteries and the symbology and the hidden religion of Babylon that is in the process of destroying the world. But to put it quite simply, it's secular humanism is what it is. And you will discover that. Anyway, over the next few months and whatever period of time we have to educate you that we, in fact, may have left. So, get ready. Sit back. Make sure you have pen and paper in your hand. And stand by for an awful lot of information and a lot of wind noise, which you may or may not like. the rumors are flying. And you'll hear some of them tonight, I'm sure, if you listen to the Great Art Bullshit Bell Show, because most of them have to do with a solar flare, a missing airplane in the state of Arizona, the rumor that some great planet or asteroid struck the sun that produced this solar flare, and all kinds of lunacy. I'm going to give you the truth about these things right now, ladies and gentlemen. Number one, solar flares are not unusual. They happen at regular, predictable intervals approximately every 11 years. And they interrupt radio communications, satellite communications, and sometimes disable satellite electronic circuits when they are not properly shielded. For the amount of radiation produced by a solar flare is unimaginable to the average person. It's one of the reasons why it is believed that the United States of America, NASA, may have faked the Apollo moon missions due to the fact that the lunar module and the command module and the lunar lander were not adequately shielded against normal solar radiation, much less solar flares. Nor were the spacesuits that the astronauts wore able to protect them from this intense radiation. There is also the fact that these craft could never have transported live human beings through the Van Allen radiation belt which surrounds the Earth. And all of this has been scientifically proven. And if you're interested in seeing any of that proof, what you need to do is write us for a list of available materials. You might be interested in ordering the book entitled NASA Mooned America, which is illuminating, to say the least. You will be struck by a solar flare of intelligence. You will be hit by ideas which you never dared to dream of before. We don't know whether NASA actually sent men to the moon or not. We do know that they faked most, if not all, of the photographs and videotapes associated with those moon landings. That much is easy to prove. It's so easy, it's absolutely pathetic. And once you're turned on by the clues of what to look for in these videotapes and photographs, it is overwhelming what revelations you are faced with at that point. The sun, ladies and gentlemen, produces solar flares actually all the time. They're unpredictable in their path that they fling radiation through the universe. They're also unpredictable as to what their strength will be. But every 11 years, as regular as clockwork, from the beginning of when man started to adequately observe the behavior of the sun, it has been noticed that these cycles occur regularly, approximately every 11 years. And so, what it is not just every 11 years there are solar flares and sunspot activity, but there is an increased amount of solar flares and sunspot activity during this 11-year cycle. And in between there are still sunspots, and there's still solar flares, but not of the degree of number or magnitude that occurs during this 11-year cycle. We have just been at the peak of one of these 11-year cycles and have been having quite a few sunspots and solar flares, and communications have been disrupted all around the world due to this. Several satellites have had their electronics fried by the last great solar flare that sent out radiation, which the Earth was in the direct path of. And now they are telling us that the sun has produced a storm the likes of which scientists have not seen before, according to NASA. Should we believe it? Well, I don't know. NASA has fooled us before, has lied to us. So I don't know whether to believe it or not. I haven't got the means to tell if the sun has really done this or not. But I do know that when a solar flare erupts, no matter what the magnitude of the flare or the radiation that it produces, It is very seldom that anyone has been able to predict the accurate path of the radiation that's flung out from the sun and whether or not the Earth will be in that path. We do know from past experience of observing the sun and the solar flares and the sunspots activity that the Earth misses the radiation, or the radiation from these solar flares misses the Earth in 99.999% of the time. Every once in a while, though, we are in the direct path of some of this radiation. The last time it occurred, an AT&T satellite and several others were fried and are no longer passing on information to the Earth. In fact, they're useless. And that's simply due to the fact that the electronic circuits were not adequately protected from this radiation. And in some cases, some other things were going on, like they powered up circuits at exactly the same time that the solar flare struck, thus overloading the circuits and frying the electronics of the satellites. That, in particular, is what they say happened to the AT&T satellite. Now, this has caused a lot of rumors to fly around. One rumor is that a large object was seen impacting the sun, which caused this solar flare. That's a lie. That is not true. You will not find any observatory or scientist, and even NASA, which has lied to us many times in the past, has not made that claim. This comes right out of the loony bin fringe element of the so-called ufologists and other wackos out there who are just waiting for this kind of stuff. And one of the rumors that has crossed my path today is that, the big spacecraft that was accompanying the Hale-Bopp comet was thrown off course by weapons launched by the United States military to prevent the aliens from invading the Earth, and it's this giant spacecraft that has crashed into the sun and caused this solar flare, and that's why you couldn't see it anymore, and that's why it never approached Earth. Well, the truth is there never was such a spacecraft or anything else accompanying the Hale-Bopp comet. It was a fraud, a fake, a lie perpetrated by Art Bullshit Bell and some of his compatriots that frequent his show on a regular basis, along with all the other crap and nonsense that this guy puts out to keep you chasing your tails so that you will never understand what's really happening in the world or in the country. But I got to tell you, if you're that dumb to fall for that kind of stuff, you'd never know anyway. Even if Art Bell wasn't doing what he's doing, you wouldn't have the slightest idea because you're over the edge. And that's the truth. Another rumor is that the flight of the launch of the space shuttle that was supposed to occur a few days ago was canceled because they knew somehow that this flare was going to erupt and they didn't want the astronauts to get fried. Well, it's true that if the astronauts were up there, they would be at great risk because of the tremendous radiation that this solar flare has put out, if indeed this flare has occurred, and if indeed the radiation does strike the Earth, which most of the time it never does. But it can. It's possible. Okay? But solar flares are unpredictable. No one can predict when a solar flare is going to erupt or what path it's going to fling the radiation out through the universe upon, or the severity of the flare. So until the flare was spotted yesterday, as a matter of fact, as they claim, by a satellite, no one had the slightest inkling that there would be any such flare, and therefore the launch of the space shuttle was not canceled because of this solar flare. It was canceled for other reasons, whatever those reasons may be. Now, they say that the flare of magnetic energy is expected to hit Earth's upper atmosphere today, this afternoon, according to Art Poland, senior scientist with the Solar and Heliosphere Observatory, which is called SOHO, at the Goddard Space Center in Maryland. SOHO is a relatively new NASA satellite that is pointed directly at the sun to monitor the sun's activity. And we just had a power fluctuation here, and I don't know if it has tripped us offline or not. If you can still hear me on satellite, please call and tell Connie that we're okay. If we're not on satellite, you're not listening to me, and it doesn't make any difference what I'm saying anyway. But I will continue until we hear some word as to whether we're still on or we're not on. The solar flare, they claim, was formed Monday when the sun generated a giant shockwave of electrified gases called a coronal mass ejection. SOHO photographs, they claim, show a flare going off. You see a shockwave leaving the sun. Basically, it's a tsunami going across the surface of the sun, Mr. Poland said in an interview with CNN. Solar events like this occur, folks, every day. Approximately 1 in 10, they claim, heads toward the Earth. The actual statistics of what strikes the Earth, folks, say that 99.99% of all of this activity misses the Earth completely. But this solar flare is about as large as one that destroyed a broadcast satellite in January. It's not the likes of anything that we've never seen before. Okay, we just got the word that we're still on the satellite, so I want to thank whoever called, and the rest of you need not continue calling now. We know now that we're still on the satellite, and that's all we need to know. So thank you very much, whoever it was that called. There have been exactly 43 cases of satellite damage as a result of solar flares, folks. This is according to astrophysicist George Lake, who is a NASA project scientist. The flares do inflict damage by sending a powerful current through the satellites, creating miniature power plants, according to Lake. The scientists say they do not know what kind of problems this solar event could cause or what is in its path. They don't know if it's going to strike Earth. And the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, they will not know unless it actually does strike Earth, and it will strike approximately 1 hour. We will have approximately 1 hour or less advance warning from our satellites and detectors that are in orbit around the Earth. So don't get all bent out of shape. Even if it does strike the Earth, ladies and gentlemen, the atmosphere protects all of us and all life on this Earth from any harm, from any solar flare, no matter what size or what intensity of radiation it produces. So the only thing that can possibly be harmed are astronauts or equipment that may be in orbit around the Earth, and that is only if they are not properly shielded from the amount of radiation that will strike the Earth. And the amount of radiation that a solar flare puts out, ladies and gentlemen, is so intense and so strong that it's pretty difficult to shield people or living beings from that radiation. And which brings up another subject. If that's true, and if everybody's so worried about the space shuttle being canceled because of this solar flare, why can't you put two and two together logically? Two, getting tongue-tied already. Why can't you put two and two together logically and come up with the question, gee, wow, the insulation on the Apollo spacecraft, the lunar lander, and the command module that supposedly went to the moon, and the spacesuits worn by the astronauts while on the moon were so thin, ladies and gentlemen, that experts have said they couldn't even protect those living human beings from the smallest solar flare or even the normal radiation that travels through space from the sun on a regular, everyday, 24-hour-a-day basis, not to mention the intense and higher level of radiation called the Van Allen belt, which surrounds the Earth, which they had to go through. How come nobody ever asked those questions? How many of you have been to Houston or to the Aerospace Museum and have seen some of these actual space capsules, lunar landers, lunar vehicles, and space suits, and command modules, and have actually seen the type of insulation and the thickness of the hull of these craft, and know that that this is true? And how come you've never asked questions about this before? You have no idea the intense radiation that occurs in space on a normal second-to-second basis. I mean, it's always there, streaming from the sun in a never-ending barrage. And it's only planets like ours that have an atmosphere that is protected from this kind of radiation. Plus, the Earth is surrounded by a belt called the Van Allen Belt, which is an extremely high, dense belt of intense radiation, which any voyage to any other planet or to the moon has to be traversed. And so people should be asking questions like that. And when you combine that with the fake photographs and the fake videotapes that NASA has presented to us as the actual photos and videotapes of an actual moon landing and walking on the moon and all that kind of stuff, it becomes extremely difficult to believe anything that NASA ever says, period. But that's for people, you know, who really have brains and intelligence and who really ask questions and do check these things out. It's important that you learn to do that if you are not doing it now or have never done it before. Now, if this solar flare has really occurred, and if it does strike the Earth's atmosphere, there may be some spectacular effects in the atmosphere that will be observable in places where they are not normally observable. For instance, the aurora borealis will become intense during this period of radiation striking the upper atmosphere, and you may be able to see it as far south as Boston and all across the middle and north United States, and then, you know, any place in the world way much further down in latitude than you would normally be able to see the aurora borealis. It may cause some other strange atmospheric phenomena, which I cannot predict, but which you should watch for. Don't worry about being outside when it strikes, if it does strike. It cannot and will not hurt you in any way whatsoever. The atmosphere completely protects and shields us from it. Okay? All these other rumors and bullshit and crap and lies that you're going to hear, dismiss them, throw them away. Don't listen to them. It's all a bunch of crap designed to designed to make you hysterical and keep you from really learning what you should be learning and doing what you should be doing. And those that buy into that stuff will just, you know, spend their life chasing their tails, really chasing moonbeams, if you want to know the truth about it. Okay, here's the next blurb. M. Wesley Swearington wrote a book called FBI Secrets and Agents Exposé, copyright 1994. Wes Swearington served as an FBI agent from 1951 until he retired in 1977. Ladies and gentlemen, if you think the FBI is some benevolent, wonderful organization that's here to make our lives better and protect us from crime, you got another thing coming. Because from the very beginning, it turns out that this is a criminal organization. The FBI was never established by an act of Congress and therefore is not a legitimate agency of the United States government. Instead, it was established, as the IRS was, by an internal memo of a bureaucrat and has really, if you want to know the truth about it, no more constitutional authority than as an internal investigative arm of the Justice Department itself, whose authority does not go outside the Justice Department or the boundary of the federal district known as Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. Wes Swearington served as an FBI agent from 1951 until he retired in 1977. He wrote a book about his experiences and the truth about the FBI, and he corroborates what every other agent who has written about the FBI has also written. He says during that period he perpetrated or witnessed numerous violations of law by FBI agents and their operatives, heard revealing statements by other agents about their illegal activities, had read files which documented violations of the rights of American citizens. The activities of FBI agents and their informers slash provocateurs include, but are not limited to, warrantless break-ins, thefts, fraud, kidnapping, perjury, fabrication of evidence, suborning of witness perjury, and murder. The targets were political dissidents, anyone the FBI agents did not like. Swearington tells how members of the Black Panthers were murdered by FBI operatives. Another was framed for a murder he did not commit, and still others were prosecuted on trumped-up charges. And I read to you on this broadcast the deathbed statement of an FBI agent who admitted that his office in Louisiana planted explosives, a bomb, in the car of someone they did not like and wished to throw in jail. And in fact, they did arrest him on charges that he had a bomb in his car and was planning to blow something up, and he served time in prison. I read that deposition to you on the air, signed by a judge, by the FBI agent, and the court reporter to whom he gave the deposition. And this man just backs it all up. Others have written the truth about the FBI and other government agents. The Black Panthers have long claimed that they were targeted, that their leaders were murdered, and they were framed in order to destroy the Black Panthers, which was, ladies and gentlemen, in fact, a militia that protected black neighborhoods and did an awful lot of good for black children and black people and those black neighborhoods. You didn't know that the Black Panthers was a militia, did you? It's the truth. You know those little guys in New York City that wear the little red berets and ride the subways and try to stop crime in New York City? That's a militia also. You didn't know that either, did you? But it's the truth. Swearington details, in great detail, in this book, how members of the Black Panthers were murdered by FBI operatives, and another was framed for a murder he didn't commit. And still others were prosecuted and framed on trumped-up charges in order to destroy the Black Panthers. He does not mention anything about the deaths of John or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King Jr., but he does describe an agency so deeply involved in criminal activity of every kind as to be capable of causing the deaths of those men and others who have died under mysterious circumstances. And we do know and have proven that the FBI is integrally linked to the murder of John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. Swearington also describes various files on political dissidents called the Security Index. And, get this, he confirms what I wrote in my book years ago that I learned while I was a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence. And the Reserve Index, which eventually included about 500,000 names, and which were the persons to be arrested without warrant and taken to detention areas in the event of a national security emergency. That is the master warrant list, which I disclosed in my book years ago, which is kept in Mount Weather, and the entire list is made up mostly of constitutionists, patriots, militia members, and those who will fight against the destruction of the Constitution for the United States of America when they do declare this national emergency, probably brought on through a stock market crash and an economic crisis. And during this time, they will round up all the people who are on that list so that they can implement their New World Order. That's the truth. And people said I was crazy. There was no master warrant list. There was no list of names to be rounded up in case of a national emergency. And there were no detention camps. Yet this FBI agent writes about it in his book and verifies and confirms what I wrote about many years ago. For those of you who are inclined to dismiss such concerns as paranoid, This is supporting evidence. Swearington also provides an insider's view of the COINTEL program. The COINTELPRO program. The suppression of political dissidents, but also tells us that the program continues to this day under another name, apparently without a paper trail. I already know about that. I've been the target of it on many occasions. He paints a picture of an agency riddled with corruption, incompetence, and inefficiency, composed of men who may have once been patriots, but who have been reduced to common criminals, whose crime-fighting activities are limited at best and largely for show, with political repression being their primary mission. How about that? Bet you don't like it at all. Well, neither do I. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is brought to you for a few short days, at least, more, until April the 30th, by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets, gold and silver, real money. Call them at 1-800-289-2646. Ask for a copy of the free newsletter. Tell them you're a listener to the Hour of the Time and get some real money. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Now, some of you, ladies and gentlemen, may suggest that the FBI may have been reformed since Swearington left the agency in 1977 and no longer does the things he describes. Now, certainly there have been some reform efforts, or so we're told, but how much can we believe from agencies of government whom have proven to be nothing but chronic liars over the years? How can we believe anything that they say? Even though they say there have been some reform efforts, particularly during the period Edward Levi was Attorney General, and we would expect another generation of agents to have taken the place of those Swearington worked with, but, ladies and gentlemen, available evidence, including continuing harassment of West by his former agency, indicate it has not been reformed at all. And the new movie, ladies and gentlemen, based upon the government's own film from the forward-looking infrared radar, forward-looking infrared detectors that the government made, it's their own film. This film, subjected to intense examination by effort, efforts of experts from the entire political spectrum, liberals and conservatives and law enforcement and independents and everybody in between, has just been made into a movie called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, which proves that the FBI and the United States government and the United States Attorney General, the butcher, Janet Reno, lied to us about what happened in Waco, Texas, and they are continuing to lie. The sham investigation that Congress conducted into what happened at Waco disclosed some of the lies, but then they stopped before they went too far into the disclosures. What this movie shows, ladies and gentlemen, is that the FBI did start the fires, without any doubt, that they intentionally tore up all of the exit points to the building except for one exit door in the back so that they could control the escape of the Branch Davidians. This movie also shows, remember, it's the one made by the government. It also shows, without any doubt whatsoever, that when the Branch Davidians tried to escape through the only avenue left open to them, they were met with machine gun fire that mowed them down unmercifully. There's also a video that clearly shows a government agent emerging from the upstairs, the second story of the church building, wearing a gas mask and carrying on his back a flamethrower. He jumps to the ground, takes off his mask, and calmly walks away. He's wearing black from head to toe. He's not a Branch Davidian. He's a government agent. He calmly emerges from an upstairs window during the conflagration by fire. Calmly and slowly jumps to the ground, takes off his mask, and slowly and calmly strides away. The Branch Davidians were murdered, ladies and gentlemen, by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. It is no longer conjecture. It is not the ravings of mad conspiracy theorists. I have given you the dates and times of the showings of that film on the air. And if you really want to see the truth, you will go see the film. Even the most rabid socialist left-wing liberals, upon seeing the film, have emerged with hatred in their eyes toward the Federal Bureau of Investigation, shaking their head, proclaiming they never would have believed in a million years that it could have happened, but now they know that it did. Whenever the film shows, I will give you the dates, times, and places where it will be shown on the air whenever we know that information and we're keeping track of it. Now, there have been other books exposing the FBI by former FBI agents that have told similar tales, such as William Turner, author of Hoover's FBI, The Men and the Myth, and books by former agents of the CIA, such as those by Philip Agee, John Stockwell, Victor Marchetti, Frank Snipp, and Ralph McGeehee. It seems likely that similar books remain to be written by agents of almost every agency of the United States government, revealing them as criminal enterprises and implicating almost every employee as criminal conspirators. Such agents should read this book and begin gathering the evidence they will need to take out with them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's obvious to me that not everyone in government is a subversive or a criminal or is doing a bad job. But there are enough of them, and in enough of the highest positions, that it really doesn't matter. They have subverted this government. These people who are engaged in this subversion are Marxists and communists. And they are actively involved in taking down this country, this government, in order to install in the world what we have documented and sourced many times on this broadcast, in the law, in treaties, in the United Nations resolutions and conventions, and in the United Nations Charter itself, as a one-world totalitarian socialist government. If you'd like to get a copy of this book, you can order it from South End Press. 116 Saint Botolph Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 01225. That's South End Press, 116 Saint Botolph Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 01225. The book is $13 plus shipping and handling. I don't know how much the shipping and handling is. You could probably get the number of South End Press from the information operator and give them a call. It's $13 plus shipping and handling. The name of the book is FBI Secrets and Agents Exposé by M. Wesley Swearingen. Get the book. Read it for yourself. And remember, this man was an FBI agent his whole career. Now, here's another one of those things that is causing rumors to fly, especially among the ufology crowd. Those people out there who like to chase moonbeams and lights in the sky and little green aliens. There is an A-10 missing. That's an airplane, ladies and gentlemen, a military aircraft. It was flown by Captain Craig Button. It's a $9 million Air Force attack jet. It was being flown on a training mission. The group of planes which this aircraft was flying in formation with made a left turn, a right turn, and then that plane was gone. They don't know what happened to it, neither does anybody else. Did it crash? Nobody knows. Did the pilot steal it? Nobody knows. Anything that you can think of has probably been looked at, investigated, and theorized. But this is one thing I know is going to happen. Listen to Art Bell. You're going to hear it. You're going to hear it on the Art Bullshit Bell Show. This is my prediction. And you'll hear it on the internet in the ufology news groups and chat forums, that a giant alien mothership came down and swallowed this plane up, captured it, and took it off to some other planet for study. That's what you're going to hear tonight on the Art Bullshit Bell Show, if you haven't already heard it, and I don't listen to him every night, so I don't know. But if it hasn't already been ventured on his show, it will be, and I'll bet you it will be tonight. Want to bet? Now, here's some other things they're saying. They're saying that they're still sighting the plane, flying at low altitude across the state of Colorado and even up in Canada. And I'm going to tell you right now, unless that plane was refueled in flight, it ran out of fuel a long, 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 long time ago and is not flying anywhere unless, like I said, it was refueled in flight or managed to land at some airbase and refuel. Okay, folks. So, you know, unless those two things have happened, and I got to tell you, if they did, then the United States military is in on it. Because it can't get refueled in the air except from a United States military in-flight refueling aircraft. And the moment it ever landed at any airfield in the country, anywhere, its presence and location and flight plan and everything else would be known. So I can tell you neither one of those two things has happened. I can also tell you that it wasn't swallowed up by any alien mothership and taken off anywhere for any purpose whatsoever. I can also tell you that despite all the rantings of all the people on the internet and on the telephone and everywhere else, that it couldn't possibly have disappeared off of radar, that's total crap. Especially in the Midwest here, or in the Southwest, along the Continental Divide, this airplane could have easily disappeared from radar and flown below the detection limit or altitude of radar along the mountains and through the valleys for probably a couple of thousand miles, ladies and gentlemen, without any detection whatsoever. Somebody in Colorado said that a low-flying plane that fit the description flew low over his head and rattled his pickup truck. But we don't know that that was that aircraft, because these occurrences happen all the time all over the country. And being that it happened on the same day that the plane disappeared, it could have happened. But we don't know for sure. Nobody knows what happened to this aircraft. Nobody knows where it is. Nobody knows why it happened. Nobody's likely to know until the aircraft is found. Okay? So you can put all those rumors to rest, ladies and gentlemen. Just put them to rest. What else do we have? All kinds of things, I bet you. I bet you we have all kinds of things here. But I better do this right now. If I don't do this, I'm likely to forget. Okay, that's ready. Oh, boy. Now, guess what? Remember what I told you a long, long time ago, that militias would be attacked by all segments of the liberal political spectrum? And remember the broadcast I did a couple of years back proving that Planned Parenthood is a Marxist front organization designed to destroy the family unit in this country? Proved it in their own documentation and literature on this broadcast. Well, now the Planned Parenthood Federation of America Incorporated has attacked militias. And everybody else, as a matter of fact, who's not a Marxist socialist scumbag. Here's a letter from the Planned Parenthood Federation of America Incorporated, 810 7th Avenue, New York, New York, 10019. Dear friend, sadly, a letter like this would have to be treated with suspicion at Planned Parenthood. While you probably opened the envelope without much thought, such haste could be deadly for the volunteer at a women's health center, and the brave people who risk life and limb to make sure that women have access to health care must now be taught to look out for packages that arrive without a return address. Hand-addressed mailings like the one you just opened are particularly frightening. Now, folks, don't you find it strange that these people are so concerned about the life and limb of the brave women who have access to health care at women's health centers, and the volunteers who open their letters but don't care one bit about the murder of babies by abortion, and especially the last term abortions where the baby is said to have gone through a partial birth, and then the doctor pokes a hole in the skull of the baby and literally sucks its brains out of its head. These people are murderers. There's no doubt about it. So I don't have any sympathy for them, except for the fact that I do not believe anybody should be committing these acts of violence that are occurring, and do not encourage it. I just can't find it in my heart to have sympathy for people who themselves have no sympathy for the young babies that they murder. Probably by now numbering in the close to 100 million, maybe. I don't know. It's a lot. Listen to what they say. You see, Planned Parenthood facilities now suffer more than 1,000 acts of violence and threats each year. Doctors were shot in Kansas and Florida. Women's health centers were bombed in Washington, Oregon, California, Minnesota, and 15 other states. Two healthcare receptionists were murdered in Massachusetts. Volunteers are routinely hassled. Photos of doctors are now printed on wanted posters, resulting in frequent stalking of doctors. Doors are chained or glued shut. Buildings are peppered with bullets and, quote, militias singled us out for attack, end quote. And that, folks, is what I'm getting to. It is a barefaced, blatant, outright lie. In no incident ever has it been shown or even insinuated that any militia has ever attacked an abortion clinic, any Planned Parenthood building or organization or personnel, or any people associated with abortion or Planned Parenthood whatsoever. The militias must enforce the law. This is a lie. But since they can't have their New World Order without destroying the militias and making you all hate the militias, they must lie to you and make you believe that the militias are now attacking abortion clinics and Planned Parenthood organizations. Remember, folks, socialists are the biggest liars that have ever lived upon the face of this earth. Their entire history is nothing but a lie. Karl Marx was a lie. Their whole agenda is a lie. Everything they do is a lie. And none of it has ever been shown to work. It's a lie, period. So they go on for pages here, talking about wearing bulletproof vests and teaching volunteers and staff about letter bombs and armoring their clinics and fortifying the doorways and making sure that people in the clinic can't be hit by gunfire from the door. And all of these precautions may be warranted in light of the fact that there are some lunatics out there who will do some of these things, but it's not malicious, I can assure you. Not malicious. And I got to tell you something else. When a woman's health is in danger, and it's between whether giving birth to a non-viable fetus or allowing the mother to die, I have no problem with doctors doing what they have to do to save a life. That's saving life, ladies and gentlemen. But anything other than that is murder, in my estimation. And I got to tell you something else. As long as the government and these people condone the act of murder, there will be people, unlike me, who cannot restrain themselves, who will go against the law and will retaliate with the firm and clear idea in their mind that they are doing the right thing by preventing these people from perpetrating and carrying out other murders on the grand scale that it is being carried out across this country. And one of these days, both pro-life and pro-abortion people are going to have to confront this reality, and they're going to have to deal with it. And for my part, I hope it's soon. And I got to tell you something else. The federal government has no business, I don't care what the Supreme Court says, interfering with the laws in the states regarding this issue. And the only way to properly deal with it is have each community in each state decide for themselves what they want to be occurring in their communities and in their states. This issue is not going to go away. It is a volatile issue. The women who are pro-abortion want to be able to have sex without responsibility anytime they want to, with no consequence and no worries, and be able to abort those fetuses anytime they happen to occur. These are the humanists amongst us. On the other side, you have people who clearly believe that the lives of those children, our children, are human beings, and are not just lifeless fetuses without a soul or personality. And they believe that the destruction of those fetuses, those babies, those children, is murder. And until those two opposing camps are somehow brought together with some kind of a mutual understanding, you're not going to stop the violence connected with this issue. It is too volatile. and whatever violence occurs on either side can be too easily, ladies and gentlemen, justified by the perpetrator in their own mind and in the minds of their followers. So some people with some cool heads and some brains had better start trying to find a solution to this problem, and they had better start doing it quick. Because according to the statistics I see and the mood in the country, I sincerely believe that the violence will escalate, and I believe that the violence will escalate as a part of a preconceived plan to bring about a real conflict in this country, along with a lot of other incidents. The incidents of terrorist attacks, for instance, will escalate. Not because I have anything to do with it. I have nothing to do with it. Would do everything in my power to stop anyone if I knew that they were going to perpetrate any kind of a terrorist act anywhere. But because I know that this country has to be destroyed from within in order to bring about the New World Order. And so the people who are in the process of doing exactly that will do anything to make it happen. Anything at all. And most people who don't understand what's happening and how they can be used in these conflicts innocently will be used and discarded and scapegoated and imprisoned and killed and shot down in the process of their being used. If you like to know why there's so much crime and violence in this country, well, I'm going to give you one example right now. Is this justice? This is from the Boston Globe, April 9th, 1997. Is this justice? By Eileen McNamara. Let me correct that title. It's This Is Justice? Question mark. That's the headline. This Is Justice? Question mark. By Eileen McNamara. April 9th, 1997, from the Boston Globe. Benjamin Kennett could use a haircut. His blonde locks spill over pale eyebrows and pink ears as he scampers across the living room, delaying his bedtime for as long as he possibly can. Distracted by his engaging giggles, it's easy to miss the bulky diaper beneath the 5-year-old's cotton pajamas. Benjamin, you see, began wetting his bed last summer after he was raped by a 12-year-old boy in their Lexington neighborhood of pricey homes and luxury cars, just the sort of neighborhood we like to believe where sexual assaults do not happen. But it did happen to Benjamin. In the bushes, where he was raped during a neighborhood cookout. In the playroom, where he was lured with the promise of games. In the wake of the latest Fells Acres daycare decision, we have been treated to a lot of talk about the miscarriage of justice in child abuse sexual cases. We read that public hysteria prompts gullible juries to believe the improbable stories of impressionable preschoolers. And that has been proven, by and large, to be true. We see that rallies are being staged by people who never attended the trials or read the transcripts to demand a pardon for Violet Amaralt, Cheryl Amaralt, Lefebvre, and Gerald Amaralt. We hear that political correctness leads weak-willed judges to stack the deck against defendants in child abuse cases. That isn't how the judicial system worked for Doctors Catherine and Jean-Pierre Kennett for the last 7 months. A few weeks ago, the boy who raped their son stood up in Concord District Court and admitted to indecent assault and battery and rape and abuse of a child under 14. He said he did it, but before his confession could bring some measure of relief to Benjamin and his parents, Judge Paul McGill pronounced the defendant, quote, not delinquent, end quote, and sent him back to the neighborhood where his victim still wakes up screaming in the middle of the night. McGill balked at having the record reflect the defendant's own admission, Benjamin's parents said, because, as the judge put it, he did not want a juvenile rapist to suffer the stigma of having to comply with the state's sex offender registry law. That law would have required Benjamin's attacker to register with local police for 20 years, a prudent course to protect other children, one might think, and that is the purpose of the law, isn't it? Instead, McGill continued the case without a finding, ensuring that the 12-year-old will have no record for the rape and assault he admitted committing. Needless to say, the Canets were stunned by the judge's discretion. If he's not found delinquent, if he's not punished, then why does the criminal justice system exist? Dr. Jean-Pierre Canet, a professor at Harvard Medical School, asked the judge. Well, I'll tell you, folks, the clue might be in the term criminal justice system. It's justice for criminals, not anybody else. The Canets say this. Listen, quote, if we had known there was a chance that he would not be found delinquent, we would not have gone to the police and through this whole process. It is much too painful. We can assure you no loving parents would ever step forward if they knew in advance that the rape of their child would end up with an admission to sufficient facts and a non-delinquent finding, end quote. Now, Benjamin is in therapy. The boy that raped him is not. Benjamin wakes up screaming every night. The boy that raped him is going about his business. Benjamin's big brother is in therapy. Both of his parents are in therapy. The terms of the admitted rapist probation? You guessed it. He must, at some future date, get into therapy. Have you ever been to therapy, folks? Have you ever watched therapy? Let me tell you something. You may not understand it, but these so-called sensational daytime talk shows where they have Jenny What's-Her-Name and Geraldo Rivera and I don't know half their names because I don't watch this crap. I watched them for a little while just to see what they were up to. That is therapy for the nation. It is designed to make the nation accept deviant behavior as normal and not ostracize those who indulge in it. It's called group therapy, and it is part of the communist master plan to destroy America. And I read you part of that plan on the air here, all about psychopolitics and how they would change the thinking of the American public. That's what that's all about. That's what therapy is. It's to get you to accept things that you would never in your life ordinarily accept, and in my estimation should never be accepted by any moral, thinking, ethical, God-fearing man or woman upon the face of this planet. Oh, but I forgot. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in morals or ethics. They believe that man is God, and therefore each experience is subjective. And it's okay to lie and to cheat and steal and murder and everything because they're just learning experiences, and the person who is the victim and the perpetrator both learn from the experience. That is the socialist, scumbag, humanist point of view. In case you've never read any of their literature, that's exactly what it says. That's what they're teaching your children in school. Did you know that? A defendant stands up in court and admits his guilt and is allowed to walk away scot-free. Nothing happens. Isn't that amazing? The poor child Benjamin has been stigmatized. It has appeared in the newspaper. The community knows it. Everybody at school knows that he was raped. And therefore, for a good many years into the future, he will suffer. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Jennings and ABC Television Network plans to air an interview. An interview. Tapes with McVeigh, the Patsy's father, tomorrow, Thursday, 10 April 1997 at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Adjust the time for your own time zone. If it's 10 Eastern, it's going to be 9 Central. It's going to be 8 Mountain, unless you live in the state of Arizona. It will be 7 Mountain, because we don't go on daylight savings time. And on the West Coast will be 7 p.m. Check your own listings, however, just in case your local station records it and plays it at some later time. That's tomorrow, Thursday, 10th of April, 1997, at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Peter Jennings will air an interview with McVeigh's father. Now, I have no doubt that McVeigh was somehow involved in the blowing up of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, but the investigation of the Intelligence Service of the Second Continental Army of the Republic tells us that McVeigh is a patsy, that he actually thought that he was doing something patriotic. And I think that's what's going to come out in this trial, if the defense has a chance to present a real defense. And I'm not telling you that if he's guilty, he should get off. That's not what I'm saying. But I am telling you this. This is the United States of America. In this country, anyone accused of a crime is innocent until proven guilty. And if you don't believe that, you're not an American. And if you don't believe that, the same thing could happen to you that's happened to many other people. You could be accused and convicted simply because you were confused and spend the rest of your life in prison. Because you were confused, accused, and because everybody in this country is now beginning to believe that if you're accused, you're guilty. You better watch out. As a new weapon in the so-called fight versus terrorism. A new weapon against terrorism works like Superman's eyes. It looks right through you. This is taken from the Washington Times, National Weekly Edition, August 25th, 1996, page 9. It's volume 3, number 34. That's the way I like to get information, thoroughly sourced like that. The high-tech camera, known as the passive millimeter wave imager, boasts the equivalent of X-ray vision, which allows it to penetrate clothing to see a concealed weapon, plastic, explosives, or drugs. Now, how much you want to bet that the guy sitting behind this thing isn't going to be looking at pretty women when they pass by also, and even not-so-pretty women? What's going to stop him from doing it? And if it's a woman, what's going to stop her from doing it? To women and men. What's going to stop the man from doing it to men? What's going to disclose to us the sexual orientation or the perversions of these people who are going to be looking through these cameras? And what right do they have to be seeing what's in our pockets that we don't want anybody else to see? And how do we know this thing cannot read documents in our wallets or into our pockets? But the whole thing is moot if you understand the Constitution and you have read the fourth article in amendment. This is an unreasonable search. Not allowed. Yet they're doing it. They're doing it, ladies and gentlemen. And you are silent about it. Not saying a word. Not me. I'm screaming to the world How many of you will take up the cry? Now they're trying to convict Timothy McVeigh in the press based upon a letter he wrote to his sister where he says, what I've said on the air many times, does that mean that they're going to come and get me next for the bombing of the Alfred P. Mura Federal Building in Oklahoma City? Because they want to convict him on what he wrote in a letter about what he thought about the murder of the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, who were murdered. They were destroyed intentionally by the United States government based upon an allegation that they had a machine gun for which they need only pay a $200 tax. That $200 tax did not justify even the limited expenditure of the first raid on the first day of the Branch Davidian Church. It's on record, and the BATF has admitted it, that David Koresh invited them out to inspect all their weapons if they thought they had a machine gun. Just come on out, he said. Tell them to come on out. When the BATF was at a local gun store and told the gun store that they believed that David Koresh had some illegal weapons, he said, well, hold on, I'll call him. He called him right there in front of the BATF agents. This came out in the investigation. It's true, folks. Called David Koresh on the telephone, told him the BATF agents were in his store and thought that he had some illegal weapons. And David Koresh told them right there on the phone, come on out. Inspect everything that we've got. Come on out right now. So we won't even have any time to hide anything. They refused. Because that's not what it was all about. Timothy McVeigh, this is what they're printing in the Denver the Denver Post. And this particular article is from Denver Associated Press, Wednesday, April 9th, 1997. Timothy McVeigh says women and children were gassed and burned alive at the hands of the FBI at the Branch Davidian compound, but the public didn't care because they never saw the charred remains. Public didn't care. I heard so-called Christians say this, quote, they were just a bunch of religious fanatics. They deserved what they got, end quote. That's why our founding fathers came to this country. They were just a bunch of religious fanatics who were persecuted in Europe and in other places. They came here to obtain religious freedom, and that's why our Constitution was written to give us that freedom and protect us all. Yeah, they were just a bunch of religious fanatics. They deserved to die. End quote. Actual words spoken to me by people who call themselves Christian and go to church every Sunday. They're not Christians. They're not even human beings. I have no respect for people who said those things whatsoever. They're not Americans. They have no conscience, no morals, no ethical values, no nothing. They're just as bad as the people who murdered those Branch Davidians. Now they're trying to convict Timothy McVeigh because he drew attention to that in a letter to his sister. Also in a letter that he sent to the weekly Oklahoma Gazette, McVeigh said the public was duped into believing government accounts of the standoff near Waco, Texas. Excerpts of the letter were published in the Oklahoma Gazette. McVeigh's attorney, Stephen Jones, confirmed the letter's authenticity but downplayed its significance. I don't see anything in the report that bears on this case, he said. And it doesn't, because if it did, I'd be there as a defendant with him, because I've said all the same things on the air. The investigation conducted by Congress confirmed it. The investigation conducted by everyone who investigated has confirmed it. The video that the Branch Davidians made themselves inside the compound when they were under siege and given to the FBI, which we obtained, proves it, confirms it. The 911 tapes during the original raid confirm it. The government's own film taken with forward-looking infrared detection devices confirm it and prove it beyond any shadow of a doubt. Am I excusing the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building? Not on your life. It was a terrible crime that I would never condone in a million years. Even if this country were at war with its citizens, I would not condone the murder of unarmed people. Not ever. But I do condemn trying to convict Timothy McVeigh because he thought about what happened in Waco, Texas, which, by the way, has turned out to be true. Yeah, I just find it hard to believe that Americans have sunk to the level of the average Soviet citizen in the old Soviet Empire, because what I see and hear going on around me in this country today is exactly what I used to see and hear that was going on in the Soviet Union that we all condemned and thought was so crazy and so terrible could never happen in America. Listen to this, quote, "The public never saw the Davidians' home video of their cute babies, adorable children, loving mothers, or protective fathers," end quote, McVeigh wrote. Quote, "Nor did they see pictures of the charred remains of children's bodies. Therefore, they didn't care when these families died a slow, tortuous death as they were gassed and burned alive at the hands of the FBI," end quote. McVeigh called FBI agents, quote, "wizards of propaganda," end quote, who molded the facts to fit their own purposes. That's mild. I've told the truth about the FBI, and it's much worse than that, ladies and gentlemen. But they want to convict Timothy McVeigh because of what he thought about Waco. If they convict him, it must be on the evidence that he, in fact, did bomb that building or participate in the bombing of that building, and not what he thought about what happened in Waco, Texas, or anything else. And I must remind you all that this is America. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols and everybody else in this entire country who is accused of a crime, whether you believe they did it or not, are innocent until proven guilty. And if you ever deviate from that founding principle that this country's justice system is based upon, you have endangered your own self. For then you allow political trials and political prisoners and political murders. And then I'm going to have to oppose you because I won't allow it. The Federal Aviation Administration calls for collecting Social Security numbers of all air travelers. On March 13th, the FAA issued a call for comments on a FAA proposal to require airlines to collect substantial personal information on each passenger, including full name, address, next of kin, social security number, and date of birth. The purpose of this collection would be to facilitate identification of victims of airplane crashes. Bull-loney. Bull-loney. It's just another cog in the wheel of total control of every person that lives upon the face of this earth. The proposal anticipates that passengers would have to provide this information in order to board an aircraft. The proposal raises a number of substantive threats to personal privacy. One major problem is that it appears to violate the Privacy Act of 1974, which limits the ability of government agencies to collect the Social Security number. There also appears to be no limitations on the use of the collected information, creating a risk that the data could be put to a wide variety of unrelated uses by both the airlines and government agencies, which will all be used against you ultimately. One potential use of this information would be in connection with the controversial profiling proposals recently recommended by the Gore Commission. The use of the Social Security number would simplify the comparison of passenger records with other databases, and that's what it's really for. It has nothing to do with identifying anyone. Nothing whatsoever. nobody's business where I travel to, when I come back, or what conveyance I use, or how much money I spend in doing it. I'm not a criminal. Are you? You see, the professional terrorists who blow up airplanes, ladies and gentlemen, never use their own identification, social security number, birth date, or anything else. This is aimed at us. Here's another one. The White House floats a draft crypto bill. The White House has just released a new draft proposal on key escrow encryption to the Congress. The draft, dated March 12th, is entitled the, quote, Electronic Data Security Act of 1997, end quote. The legislation is the latest attempt to push forward the result the administration sought to achieve with the failed Clipper Chip initiative, which the American people did not want. Now they're trying something else, which ensures government access to all encrypted communications through government escrow keys. The government has no business looking at anything that I want to be so secure that I would encrypt it, and I would never give them a key, nor allow them to decrypt anything that I have or have encrypted or ever will encrypt. I go to jail first. You see, because if I encrypt something, it is so private to me and to other people, if they're involved, that I'm not going to let anybody see it. And an awful lot of people trust me, ladies and gentlemen. I would go to jail and rot in jail for the rest of my life before I would ever allow such a thing to take place. Now, let's go back to this FAA thing for a moment. Well, it's not here. I thought it was. The FAA has issued a call for comments on this Social Security number thing, and it's not just the Social Security number, it's all the other information that I read to you that they want. I don't have the number here, but you should call the FAA in Washington, D.C. and find out the proper way to respond with comments on this FAA proposal and tell them no. No, not in a million years. Will we condone it or accept it? You should not do it. So please do that, ladies and gentlemen. To achieve the goal that the White House wants as far as cryptology is concerned, the bill would create incentives for all persons and organizations to use a government-certified certificate authority, CA for short, to establish their identities for any electronic transactions. The CA would ensure that there was an escrow system in place before it would issue an identification certificate to the user. The government claims it would never use the key. Do you believe that? The government claims it would never use the key to decrypt your messages unless, of course, you were suspected. Not convicted, but suspected of some criminal activity. You know, and if I wanted to see your private information, couldn't I walk up and say, hey, I suspect you of some criminal activity? Couldn't I say that? And who could challenge me? Because, you know, who's to say that I can't suspect you of criminal activity? Can you answer that for me? Well, who's to say the government can't suspect you of criminal activity and open up all your encrypted files and correspondence and bank accounts and financial records and everything? Patents and secret research work that you're involved in, that if it were to be revealed, you would probably lose millions of dollars. Embarrassing facts about your life or your family that maybe is not illegal, but there's no reason for anybody else to see. Tell them no. Tell them no, 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 and no, no, no. Tell your congressman and your senator, no, not no, but hell no, 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 no. Then go read 1984 again and read Brave New World again and then take a look around you and then tell me, oh, there's no need to worry. There's no need to worry. No need to worry. Jeepers creepers, there's just no need to worry. Everything's okay. Bill Clinton would never do anything like that. Sweet fellow, isn't he? National ID card is now federal law. Did you know that? Snuck right by us. We didn't even know it was happening, but I predicted it years ago. In fact, I wrote in my book that it would happen. Well, it's fact now. The other day when I read you the piece dictated to a friend by the woman who was dying, I mentioned it in there. Some people called me last night and said, Bill, there's no national ID card. Well, there is, and she knew about it before we knew about it. Although I knew it was coming and predicted it years ago, I did not know that it had already happened. But it has. It has already happened. It is federal law. In September of 1996, President Clinton signed into law the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996. Buried at approximately page 650 of the new National Defense Bill, also known as Public Law 104-208, Part Capital B, Title Roman Numeral 4, the American public was given a national ID card with no fanfare, no publicity, no scrutiny. The bill easily avoided the watchful eyes of even its most aggressive opponents, and even the congressmen and senators who voted for it did not even know it was in there because they never read the legislation that they pass. That's how far we have sunk, that these fools in Washington that are supposed to be looking out after us don't even read the legislation that they pass. Don't believe me? Call your congressman and ask him about this. Then ask him to send you a copy of the legislation. You find it, and then call him back and tell him where it is, because I can guarantee you he doesn't even know. In Section 401-403, pilot programs have been initiated by the United States Attorney General, one of which is the, quote, machine-readable document pilot program, end quote. In this particular program, employers would have, not might, or not volunteer, but will have to procure a document reader linked to the federal government's Social Security Administration in order to have the potential employee swipe their new driver's license national ID card through the reader. Then it would be up to the federal government to either approve or disapprove the applicant for employment. Remember what I told you the New World Order would be like? I've said it over and over and over again. They won't have to have prisons or jails anymore. Everybody will be shackled, chained to a computer in a never-ending system of debt. Where there is no money, all transactions, everything that you ever do will be done through a national ID card. They will know everything about you. They will know where you sleep, where you eat, where you get a drink of water, what you purchase, where you travel to. Everything. And if you just so much as utter something that they consider to be politically incorrect, they will just zero out your account in the computer. You will not be able to eat, drink, sleep, rent a place for the night. You will not be able to travel. You will not be able to start a car, because that's how far it's going to go. And nobody will help you for fear that the same thing will happen to them, and you will be left alone in the street to die. That is where all this is leading, ladies and gentlemen. It is the ultimate system of control. It is the ultimate prison, where you are imprisoned wherever you are all the time, no matter who you are or what you are doing, forever. And where they can control your actions and just zero you out any time that you do anything or utter anything that they do not consider to be politically correct. No one will help you. No one will come to your aid. No one will give you shelter. No one will give you so much as a crumb. No one will sell you anything, for without a computer transaction, goods cannot be transferred. Which means if you come up with a couch missing from your home and there is not a computer record of the transfer of that couch, even to the city dump, you will then be a criminal who has engaged in black market activity. The only way to save yourself from that is to possess gold and silver coins to conduct trade on the black market without ever going through any computer transaction. You see, folks, there's always been a method to my madness. You just aren't aware of it. I know exactly what they're going to do. I have studied them most of my life. And everything that I am telling you comes from their own writings, their own revelations, their own plans. And everything that I have ever told you was going to happen has always come true, right on schedule, just like clockwork, in the exact manner that I have revealed to you years before. Years before. Now, you don't think they're going to do this? Well, listen to this. Section 326 and 327 provide $5 million per year grants to each state participating in any of the three pilot programs. The money has been allocated through the Criminal Alien Tracking Center and is called the Criminal Alien Identification System, the automated identification system, which is to be used by federal, state, and local law enforcement and will provide for recording of fingerprints of aliens previously arrested and removed. The grants run from fiscal years 1997 through years 2001. But you see, there's a problem with this. This is how they get you to think it's okay. The automated identification system, which is to be used by federal, state, and local law enforcement, and will provide for recording of fingerprints of aliens previously arrested and removed? Oh, really? Then why do you have to have the card? And whose fingerprint is going to be on your card? And whose retina scan? And whose medical record? And whose criminal record, if any? And whose financial record? And Social Security record? And record of payment of income tax? And other things. You really think it's just going to be criminal aliens? If everybody in America has to have one, and if your employer must scan this card and go through a government data bank before he can grant you employment, wake up! Please wake up. The depth of your sleep is terrifying. Additionally, Section 656 of the new law states that after October 1st in the year 2000, federal agencies may only accept as proof of identity driver's licenses that conform to standards developed by the Secretary of the Treasury after consultation with state motor vehicle officials and the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. The AAMVA sees digital fingerprinting as the best way to go in driver's license identifiers, along with a magnetic strip that will encode upon it your entire history as a human being, including medical, criminal, social security, tax records, birth, number of children, address, phone number, and everything. Bank records.
Oh, no, they wouldn't do that to us. That couldn't possibly happen in America. Oh, Joe, bring me another Budweiser. These guys are all conspiracy freaks.
You know what, folks? There are times when you make me so angry and so disappointed and so frustrated that I have to sit down and reassess why it is that I'm doing all of this. And there's more. Oh, yes, there's much more. On May 10th in 1995, a hearing was held by the Senate Subcommittee on Immigration entitled, quote, Verification of Applicant Identity for the Purposes of Employment and Public Assistance, end quote. The hearing was chaired by Senator Alan Simpson, Republican, Wyoming, and attended by Senators Ted Kennedy, Democrat, Massachusetts, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, and John Kyle, Republican, Arizona, Robert Razor of the Secret Service, Financial Crimes Division, gave the subcommittee an explanation of the emerging biometric technological role in personal identification. He said, quote, the use of biometrics is the means by which an individual may be conclusively identified. There are two types of biometric identifiers, physical and behavioral characteristics. Physiological biometrics include facial features, hand geometry, retinal and iris patterns, DNA and fingerprints. Behavioral characteristics include voice characteristics and signature analysis. Now the people of America not only must have digital tattoos on their driver's licenses, we must also give information to the government when boarding commercial aircraft called personality profiles, along with a government ID card. Of course, this guise is in order to catch some would-be terrorists who never use any of these things that belong to them and are experts in counterfeiting identification and changing their appearance and... identities whenever and wherever they choose. So, of course, this is going to catch them. Dianne Feinstein, author of the National ID Law, explained in a Capitol Hill magazine that it was her intention to see Congress immediately implement a national identity system where every American is required to carry a card with a magnetic strip on it, which the bearer's unique voice, retina pattern, or fingerprint is digitally encoded. She also stated that 15 years ago, they would have torn the building down. We probably would have if we had known about it. I would like to see Dianne Feinstein, that communist simp from San Francisco, tried for treason and locked up for the rest of her life. That's what I would like to see. During closing remarks of the May 10th subcommittee meeting, Senator Alan Simpson stated, quote, there is much to do here, but I was just saying to Ted Kennedy before he left, a hearing like this 15 years ago would have torn the building down. And here we are today, just a bunch of us kind of sitting around, and no media, no nothing, nobody's concerned, this is fine with me. I get tired of them on this issue, end quote. Oh, dear God in heaven, please save us from ourselves. Amen. Based on other federal mandates, the Associated Press reported in the Wichita Eagle on March 6, 1997, that the federal government mandates a registry of new employees. State lawmakers balk at bill required by Congress to ease child support collection. A bill designed to increase state collection of child support payments was described as a Big Brother move and drew little support from members of the Senate Judiciary Committee on Wednesday, but the federal government says the legislature must pass it or the state could lose as much as $29 million in federal funds, the state of Oklahoma said, kiss my rear, and threw it out. Will the rest of the states do that? What else will the federal government decide to take away from the states? I hope the states are smart enough to know that the federal government doesn't have anything the states didn't give them in the first place, and if the states kept it at home, they would have a lot more than what they ever get back from the federal government once it has sucked it all dry. I tell you frequently that the military forces of the United States government are acting as the police force for the United Nations around the world. And despite the glaring proof of that in the newspapers almost daily, some people just simply refuse to believe it. Well, if that's true, why is it that United States military police are policing civilians in Australia? What, you say? I've lost my mind? Nope. The Associated Press, April the 8th, 1997, Brisbane, Australia. A civil rights group and advocates for Aborigines say Queensland police and United States military police used excessive force in making arrests, including punching and kicking Aborigines. The scuffle in Ipswich captured on security video cameras, and if it hadn't been captured on these cameras, you would never know about it, occurred several weeks ago when United States military personnel stationed at Amberley Air Base west of Brisbane for combined military exercises called Tandem Thrust. Arrested a group of Aborigines outside a local civilian nightclub in the town. One little incident. I've got a stack about a foot high of incidents just like it all over the place. Listen to this. This is from the 1928 United States Army Training Manual concerning citizenship. Democracy, a government of the masses. Authority derived through mass meeting or any other form of direct expression results in mobocracy. Attitude toward property is communistic, negating property rights. Attitude toward law is that the will of the majority shall regulate, whether it be based upon deliberation or governed by passion, prejudice, and impulse without restraint or regard to consequences, results in demagogism, license, agitation, discontent, and anarchy, which is where we're headed. Complete breakdown of the social order so that they may restore order under a world government. Most Americans don't understand the Hegelian dialectic of political conflict resolution and therefore don't even know that they're being used when they are pitted against each other to bring about the conditions of social dissolution of society. Here's another one. The Hitler Youth has been reinstituted in America, and all across America you will see this. The Baltimore County Police Explorer Program. Explorer, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, the senior echelon of the Boy Scout movement, Explorer Scouts. The Baltimore County Police Explorer Program, Police Explorer Program, is set up as an introduction to all phases of law enforcement. Listen to this carefully. It is sponsored by the Baltimore County Police and chartered annually through the Exploring Division of the Boy Scouts of America. Listen carefully, ladies and gentlemen. Through the police department Explorer Post, young people between the ages of 14 and 21 learn the role of law enforcement in the community. Explorers learn police-oriented skills and share other activities. Through their training, they are able to provide services to the department, such as searches, traffic details, security for public events, and other non-enforcement type activities. Non-enforcement type activities, searches, traffic details, security for public events. Non-enforcement type activities. What happens if somebody does something that's not secure at one of these events? And one of these explorers has to make an arrest or do something to get himself killed when he shouldn't be in that situation to begin with. Searches. Boy Scouts are searching people and property? Oh, yeah? Traffic details? Traffic details? Boy Scouts? Isn't this what Hitler did? And then slowly he brought them into informing on their parents
and their neighbors, and their school teachers, and their school principals, and their friends? Aren't there such programs being instituted in communities already all across the country? This from one of our people. I won't say the date or the time because that could possibly be used to identify this person. As I drove between Las Cruces and Alamogordo, New Mexico, there were four F-117 Nighthawks doing what appeared to be touch-and-goes, normal operation for them at Holloman Air Force Base. However, one of the four had something following it. It was a shiny black plane with yellow markings, stripes. I have someone attempting to identify it at this time. We already have the identification. I'll give you the results of that in a second. The thing was somewhere in the neighborhood of one-half to one-third the size of the F-117. It had a long cylinder for a body, and it had short, stubby main wings with a tail wing and rudder-type stabilizer on top. I don't remember any landing gear. It was flying somewhere around 100 to 300 feet behind and just below the Nighthawk. My source says it might have been a RPV or something called a Dark Star or Dark Star 1, which are both RPVs. RPVs are remote controlled or remote piloted vehicles. The thing was flying exactly in pace with the 117, which was flying rather slowly for a 117. Like I say, I thought they were doing touch and goes. The other odd thing about it was they changed their flight patterns after the pass where I was below them. I saw them make two other passes before I got there, but I looked up and there were four other vehicles pulled over, people out and looking up, when they suddenly changed the pattern to stay entirely away from the public highway, which was US 70. Now here is what we discovered about what was observed on that day. The unknown aircraft was an AGM-86. AGM is an air-to-ground missile. The AGM-86 has become part of a program being contracted by McDonnell Douglas to become an UAV, which is an unmanned autonomous vehicle, remote piloted vehicle, or some people call it remote pilotless vehicle for short. These aircraft are being flown from a bunker. In effect, the pilot is not at risk. The pilot is not even in the craft. Much like a copy of the MS Flight Simulator, which is Microsoft Flight Simulator, the cockpit is equipped just like the simulator. The American Airlines pilots learn and improve their flying skills within on the ground. These aircraft use, among other means, microwave links for telemetry. The telemetry becomes the wire for fly-by-wire, only instead of wire, they're using microwave communication. The AGM-86 is launched from another aircraft, much the same as an airborne launch of a cruise missile. The difference being the cruise missile is programmed and flies by terrain recognition at extremely low level, where the AGM-UAV missile is flown on video by a human. The AGM is powered by a turbofan engine and burns the same fuel as commercial aircraft, kerosene, or JP-4, as it's called. It has no landing gear. So, if any of you are in the vicinity where these things are being tested, we would appreciate a videotape. In our ongoing efforts to identify the technology that will eventually be used against us, to subjugate us to the New World Socialist Utopian Order, which I, for one, refuse to be subjugated to under any circumstances whatsoever. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of The Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that you have become a little more illumined in your quest for the truth. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you. And folks, I mean that sincerely from the bottom of my heart. We're all Americans. I love you deeply. Until until tomorrow night, you've been listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Remember, folks, socialism sucks, and so do socialists. First, they'll figure out a way to make you a victim, and then they will provide you with the security that will make you feel good. That security is called enslavement. This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also aired on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 99.55 kHz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be, 101.1 FM, Eager.
Have you thought about going out to eat tonight? If you live in the Round Valley, try one of the wonderful restaurants that are here. You don't have to go somewhere else.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
My favorite is Los Dos Molinos. Some of you might like Arby's, Taco Bell, McDonald's, Sapphire, Booger Red's, or any one of the others in the area. But if you're going to go out to eat, spend your money in your own community, ladies and gentlemen. Don't spend it somewhere else. Help the community prosper and grow. We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, All Oldies, Most of the Time.